So, the subject tonight is emotions and feelings. And again, we're going to take it to a place of liberation, which seems really contrary. How is that? Can that work? That emotions that seem to give us so much trouble can be a place of liberation. How does that work? So, that's the subject. So, it starts with Vedana, because Vedana is the immediate experience. It's under the Odpan, the sea of conceptual awareness. It's immediate response to life. That all beings respond fast and immediate to what's good for me, not good for me, or neutral. What I like, what I don't like. Every little animal, every haidak, has a way of going to what it likes. Garon shel mishu. Vedana actually comes from the same word, it comes from Veda, which is the same word as Yeda in Hebrew. It comes from Sanskrit. It means to know. So feelings are a sort of knowing. It's a knowing that happens. They're not a blank. They are a knowing, which in the science it's called affect. It's the mind, I forget the part of the brain that is always working with every thought. The amygdala, I think, I can't remember exactly. But it's the feeling life which is inside every perception. There is no perception that doesn't have a bit of feeling in it. We can even think, for example, we think that when we go through our day, there really isn't much feeling in there. Or we go through an hour, maybe we're just looking at something. No feeling. What is it that makes us look at something? At this leaf and not another leaf. At this building and not another building. What is it? Something is guiding our interest and our attention. And that's Vedana. Even it's pretty automatic, we don't notice it. But nevertheless, the mind is saying, look there. Look there. That's relevant. Usually, we look for safety. All beings look for safety. So, the survival mind is built from Vedana. What is, good for my safety, for my survival. So it is, Vedana is pleasant, unpleasant or neutral. Neutral we sometimes don't understand, but it can be just noise, background, just nothing special. Or it can be nothing clear, that it's not this or that. Or it can be something in the middle, or something that we don't really understand as a feeling. Or blankness. It has a territory there as well. And it's very important to realize that Vedana is the nature of life. I mean, if you think of people with the tragic disease of leprosy, what's leprosy in Hebrew? So they don't feel. The nerves don't work anymore. And they will die because they don't know how to navigate in life. So, the legs don't work. You can break a leg, but they don't know that the leg is broken. It doesn't mend. So, it's part of life. We need it, Vedana. And so, Vedana is the tguvatiyut betocha rega, in each moment, to the changes of life. But it never stays there. Vedana is the immediate, and from Vedana we start to gather together experience. And some of you were in the course that I taught a while back on the aggregates. Mitzrafim. It's clear that an experience is built from Vedana, but also from perception, from memory, from me, Sankara, my feelings, what I need. It's built with story. We begin with stories. And it brings in mind and the color, like I said in the meditation, the color of our experience. So all of that collects together, and then it becomes much more strong and much more total. And then we recognize it as anger, for example, or anxiety. So it's built from Vedana, plus all the things that Vedana gathers together as it arises in our being. It gathers, it pulls in thinking about, it pulls in my story, it pulls in my memory. I got kicked I'm an abandoned child, so my buttons are being pressed all the time, again and again, so the buttons come in there, and the memories come in there, and the survival mind gets going, and so it collects, Vedana collects with it a load of stuff, and it becomes a very recognizable experience, sometimes pleasant, and sometimes not. In the Tibetan tradition, it's quite clever. They classify all experience that has in it emotion or feeling as hope and fear. They basically say that all beings, humans and otherwise, are built around hope and fear. What I want and what I don't want. And that hope and fear just keeps on going all the time. Clearly, Vedana itself doesn't really do that much. And if we don't get into it, it's just, like I said, the music of the heart. And it can have no real consequence karmically. It doesn't need to build sankhara, to build constructions. It doesn't need to build more conditioning. It doesn't need to build attachment. But it does. It can do very easily. And then the weight has more weight, karmic weight. It does more things. So it's sort of, if we're just with the music of pushing, pulling, you know, unpleasant, pleasant, okay, pain in the knee, yeah, it's there. Passing, moving, nothing happening, not doing anything with it. And then as soon as we add to it story, oh, it's always there, oh, I wish it wasn't there, oh, I'm not a good meditator because I have pain in the knee, oh, my knee's going to be dead when I'm coming out of this retreat. All the buttons we want to press, all the control we want on life, all of that begins to build attachment, and then it becomes strong. And then it can be emotion. And emotion is built from all of these things. So emotion, anger, irritation, fear, anxiety, joy, sadness, regret, guilt, all, you know, a million varieties of emotion, all built starting with Vedana and then adding story, heart, you know, experience, memory, sankharas, and self, and a big me in the middle of it. But there are emotions that don't have very much me in them. And here we're getting to a territory of emotions that are really rather blessed, that have a blessing with them. And these are emotions that are less karmically problematic. Sadness is one. It can be not very selfing. It doesn't. It's not misery. It's not depression. It's not anger. It's not fear. It's not being pissed off. Sadness is an emotion which has less me in the middle of it. It can be cosmic. It can be a sense of, whoa, look at this life. And it is a pain, but a big pain. And these emotions are, in a way, helpful if we can move the smaller self emotions to those big ones. If we can move our anger into sadness, or, of course, our anger into compassion. So something happens to us, we get angry, but then we realize, we make a switch in the mind and realize that the person that we are arguing with angrily is suffering, and we are suffering, and the two of us are suffering through this argument. And at that moment, the whole anger can collapse, and in its place, compassion arises. So, love, of course, deep joy and contentment, Sviatratson, these are emotions, feelings that are very big, important. Longing is another one, kmeha, which is like hope, but it's much bigger than hope. And the Buddhist teaching was quite encouraging about the big emotions. So if you're going to have an emotion, have one of those. You don't have to have emotions, but if you're going to have an emotion, they're the ones to have. And he wasn't against longing, for example, because it's the longing, the kmeha, which makes us move spiritually, gives us motivation. Joy is one of the factors of awakening. Compassion and sadness are very close. Opening the heart. So the way to work with emotions, firstly and basically, is with mindfulness. Fundamentally, is with mindfulness. And here it's interesting, in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha taught kind of non-dual way of looking at emotions. And in fact, mindfulness, in a sense, is already non-dual. But he was very specific in the Satipatthana Sutta. He said, see the feelings in the feelings. The feelings in the feelings. So the body in the body. And Vedana, feelings in the feelings. So in other words, be with the feeling experience inside the feeling. The feelingness of the feeling, shall we say. The quality of feeling. What's the quality of feeling? This is instead of looking at feeling from distance or thinking about feeling. It's knowing feeling life from the inside. And in a way, all meditation is non-dual. In a way, it's from the inside. We also said the body, seeing the body in the body means not thinking about the body, not distant from the body, but really knowing the bodiness of the body. So here, the feelingness of the feelings. And it's important in mindfulness as a whole, and here especially, to have an attitude that is really non-judgmental. If there's a difficult feeling, it is just what it is. We experience difficulty, unpleasant sensations, and all that goes with it. We give it basic attention. We recognize what it is. We recognize that it's unpleasant. We know what it is. If it's an emotion, we recognize what the emotion is. Without adding to it any judgment or any sense that it should be somewhere, something else. When there is an emotion like anger, it really needs all of our practice that we've done in our whole life to be there, to be able to see it in that way. Because the thing about emotions is they gather together the whole self. And there's so much the basis of protection and Hagana and survival. So the, fight or flight response is so basic to the self, whether it's a dog or a cat or an animal or a bird or a person. And so it's kind of really strong. And therefore, it's not easy for us to look at it. So one way to do this is to find, knowing that an emotion is built from many parts, aggregate, we just look at one part of it. Very often the body. If we can get used to, for example, noticing anger in the body. How is my stomach right now? In the middle of the anger or the fear. The stomach will be talking. Will be contracted. Will be responding. And that's enough. And we can just be there with the stomach. And that's enough as a kind of a handle to be able to see the emotion non-judgmentally, allow it to be there, knowing what it is, recognizing it, and letting it change and pass. But it's important to stay with the emotions. Very often we just think of them as so unpleasant, we really want to go, I want my peace. Well, this is, this retreat is meant to be peaceful, and all I'm doing is getting angry that people are using my cup, or they're interfering with my sleep, or everyone is annoying me here, and I came here for some peace. And so there is a tendency to want to kind of remove the emotions, to censor them, to get rid of them first, but it's not the way. When there is emotion, let that be the object of meditation. And especially emotions. Because they are so powerful that if we can really get a handle on them, they are very transforming. We can really do, they are worth 10 minutes of really, really practicing mindfulness with anger, maybe worth days of sitting there in quiet, peaceful meditation. Because they're so strong, the karma is so strong, when we break it, something really happens to us. So don't, like Christopher uses this expression, when the pot boils over, don't leave the kitchen. That's his expression. I mean, maybe it's an old English expression that he uses, but I like it. And it is, basis of it is non-identification, not supporting it with more story and more issues, not judging it, not doing anything with it, allowing it to be dynamic and free and pass by. Being it, knowing it completely, knowing the feeling in the feeling, but letting it flow, change, and go. And it does. It always goes. Emotions are extremely dynamic. That even though we think, this anger inside me, like we make it a thing because it's so powerful. But if we really look at anger, it's like water. It changes rapidly. Some of you may know the story of, a Zen story, of a Zen student that came to his teacher and said, I have a problem with anger. Can you help deal with the anger? And the teacher said, yeah, I can. Bring me the anger and I'll deal with it. And we'll deal with it together. So the student said, well, at this minute, I don't have anger. So how do we deal with it? He said, oh, so go to your room, and when their next anger arises, bring it, and we'll deal with it together. So he said, yeah, but in the 10 minutes it takes for me to get from my room to where you are, the anger will surely disappear. He said, you see, even if you want the anger, you can't control it. You can't design it. It comes and it goes when it wants. It belongs to the universe. It belongs to the cosmos. It's not yours. It comes and goes. Be with that coming and going. That's all you have to do. It's not yours. The non-identification is the solution to it. Is the answer to it. And the non-identification, we can just simply do it through seeing phenomena of the anger. For example, the tummy. I mean, just, it's a place where I personally have done a lot of work on emotions. Through the tummy. Just knowing emotions arising and just recognizing, whoa, all the, it's like kaleidoscope. The stomach is a kaleidoscope. It changes every time. All the colors change. So it needs a quiet eye watching dynamic free emotions passing by, not letting them stick, being a kind of Teflon, having a Teflon mind about them, not letting them stick in the self and do damage or make karma. Let them be dynamic, because they are dynamic and free anyway. And as we do this, with emotions, with Vedana, and with feeling life, we begin to hear more deeply the music. I call it music because it really feels like that. The music of the heart. The heart is always talking. The heart is saying, Tovli, lo tovli, ani magish kacha, kacha, kacha. The felt sense, what was it in Hebrew again?
Tchusha morgish.
Tchusha, the underlying, the sources of emotion. The felt sense is somewhere between Vedana and emotion. The Vedana is the immediate, and all automatic and mostly unconscious or partly conscious moments of like of pleasant or unpleasant sensations on the level of the nervous system. And the felt sense is something that's sort of passing through as a result of that. And then the felt sense can come with story and selfing and me into emotion. So, generally, we don't really need antidote to difficult emotions. Antidotes meaning kind of changing the emotion in an active way. But sometimes it can be helpful. And it's not sort of classic Vipassana style. It's more in the world of kusala akusala, wholesome and unwholesome. It's quite traditional. And I talked about kusala and akusala before. And it is sometimes needed that you remember in the middle of the anger or fear, you remember calmness. Or you remember compassion. Or you remember in the middle of reactivity, you remember metta, love. And this is like rewriting the script. But sometimes it's helpful to do it. And especially where it's doing damage. And you feel it's a very strong pattern. So sometimes, you know, when there's a pattern of anger, if you begin to add to it compassion, that means every time you're angry, it becomes a kind of a habit that you feel compassion to yourself for your anger and compassion to the other people around you that you're angry with. And that, if you keep doing that, the anger very quickly moves there because you practice it. So there are antidotes that are helpful and you can use them. And it can even reflection to reflect on, like I said with before about kusala, akusala, to reflect on what happens when I'm angry, to get a sense of kind of a territory of my anger or my fear or my regret or my guilt or my anxiety or whatever the emotion is, to get familiar with it and offer other ways. And so it is helpful, but you don't need to do it that much, I think. Because fundamentally, the way to liberate through the emotions is to let them come and go freely without me. They'll come and go within me, but without me. Like, they are there as phenomena that are rising and passing away. And as much as possible, not take charge of them, not make a story around them, not be owning them, not be in the habit of them, not build them into, carry on building sankhara around them. And it does work when you listen to the heart as music, because it's just the music of life. So there's a liberation in that. Okay, unpleasant feeling is happening. That's it. It's like the weather. Okay, so it's raining. Okay, so it's cloudy. Okay, so it's sunny. Okay, so it's hot. It's pleasant weather, unpleasant weather. You're really being just like that with it. And that allows it to be a language because it's there. We're not trying to shut it up. We're not trying to censor or shut everything down and be a computer. We're allowing it to talk. But we like listening to the music, like sitting next to a river and listening to the sound of the water. That's all it is. Emotions, especially, are like water. And when we do this, something is released. And when we have anger, and the anger is not held, but just seen as music or water that passes by, it actually releases a bigger space. The feeling life is very alive. So if we're not contracted around fear, for example, but we allow the fear to express itself as a music and disappear, it actually opens for us a bigger space. And in a way, all the emotions can then lead to compassion. And it's very much, if you think of your own experience now, the last time you were angry or afraid or hot about something or irritated or anxious or guilty or regretting or jealous or difficult, has emotions that were unpleasant. And somehow or other they dissolved and passed. Very often there will be a residue of compassion. Very often. If you really allow them to arise and pass away, very often compassion will take their place. Because it's still the aliveness of feeling life, but it's no longer trapped in me and what I need and my survival. And when it's not trapped, becomes compassion. It's open. So people will, you know, very often say, and we all maybe have that experience, of the passing of an emotion and what's left is something bigger, usually compassion. Emotions are a power. They can, in a way, be used as a power for our liberation. In a way, They're an energy. There's a lot about this in Tantra. Tantra is really built around this, using the power of emotions. There's a famous Zen story about a student that came to the master and knocked on the door, and the master didn't answer. And the student said, well, this is my time. Every day I come here at this time. Why don't the master, the teacher is not answering? So he knocked again. Teacher didn't answer. And he got a bit irritated. So he knocked again. And the teacher opened the door and then slammed it in his face. And there was a real burst of anger in the student. And then the door opened and the master and the Zen teacher said, now watch your anger. Watch it. And that was a liberating moment. So the anger, in a way, was a power that ran through the system. Aliveness that collected the whole system and directed it towards awakening. And if it's not locked in a me and a story and all the aggregates, all the perceptions and blah, 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 and the thoughts about it, stories about it, papancha, blah, 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 but it's directed out, away from the me, or free from the me, the anger can, or the other emotion can be an agent for liberation, because it's a power. And especially because emotions are our relationship with the world. We relate to the world through our emotions, through our Vedana, through liking, not liking. That's how we relate to the world. So if that becomes freed up from the self, we can find ourselves connecting to the world very deeply by our emotional responses and leading to the liberation of being at one with the world. Like, if we imagine that we are participating in the universe, we are participators, mishtatfim. What is it that is the easiest place for us to feel that participation? And we might go there to the sensory body feeling life being the easiest place with which we can let go into the oneness of the world and myself. For example, we go out in the street and we see a little kid riding a bicycle. And all of a sudden, our heart goes out to this kid riding a bicycle. And at that moment, our heart goes out to all children riding bicycles and all children in the world and children of cats and dogs and mice and birds in the sky and so on. I mean, it kind of push us out into feeling connected to the whole world through emotional life, if it's not trapped into the self. So the emotional life is an agent that can bring us out into connection, into being, not thinking about oneness or thinking about belonging to the world and me as one, but actually feeling it on the vibration level. And the way to do this, again, is to allow the emotions to pass through the system without making any tracks. like a bird flying through the sky. Signless, trackless. And that's one of the words that is used again and again in the Dharma, in the ancient texts, for experience that liberates us. Trackless. It doesn't leave a trace, a track. It's like a line in water that disappears. And emotions, if we allow them to be like that, to the heart just singing and not doing anything, not having to have results, not having to make, have to deal with anything, but it just passing, this is a freedom. So there's a power there. And I want to read some interesting practice coming from Dzogchen tradition, the Tibetan non-dual tradition. And in this book, The Flight of the Garuda, which I think is an amazing practice manual, it's one of the best practice manuals I've ever seen in anything, in any Dharma. He's got practices that he talks about emotions, and he actually asks us to remember an experience that we've had so as to generate the emotion and then work with it. For example, generating hatred. He says, "You've at one time or another, all of you have been injured by others. Very carefully recollect in detail how others have wrongfully accused you and made you a victim, have humiliated you and ground you in, pushed you into the ground, and how you were shamed and deeply hurt. Be there with these experiences, these memories, and let hatred arise." Hatred and anger, I presume. "And as it arises, look directly at its essence, at hatred itself, and then discover, first, where the hatred comes from, second, where it is now, and finally, where it goes. Look carefully for its color, its shape, or any characteristics." And then he says, "Surely the vision of your anger is ultimately empty and ungraspable. Do not reject anger. It is mirror-like awareness itself." And he goes through different emotions. For example, when you are tired, depressed, and dull, accept your tiredness. And as it arises, gaze directly at its essence. Who is it that is tired and lazy? Where does it come from? And then, where is it now? And where does it go? This sense of your tiredness is ultimately empty and ungraspable. Do not reject your stupidity. It is awareness of the vastness of space, of reality. If you I won't read them all. He goes through passions, and he goes through desire, and he goes through jealousy, and then he says, if you intuit the nature of your passions in this way, emotional defilements or emotional conditioning become primary awareness. It's ridiculous to expect to find primal awareness and emptiness if you suppress passion. How tragic to spend your life searching for something in a place where it is inconceivable that you should find it. After you have realized the five poisons or the five passions, emotions as emptiness, It's not necessary to examine every emotion that arises. There is no need to search for the seat of the passion, and so on and on and on and on. Once you've understood that the passions or the emotions are empty, just don't run after them the moment they arise. Relax into your own nature, into the nature of mind, and the emotion will naturally vanish and pass away. And then he says, if you practice this, whenever the emotions arise, because of a habit of seeing them in this way, seeing their hidden core, their emptiness and their primal awareness, then the emptiness arises at the same moment as the emotion. The release and arising of appearances are simultaneous. The release and arising of appearances are simultaneous. So it arises and is released at the same time into emptiness. And he quotes a lot of Tibetan traditions and lamas that says, the greater the passion and the emotion, the greater the intensity of the thinking mind, the greater the space of liberation. So, just pay attention to that. Just pay attention to that. And then rest in equanimity.
What is this?
Flight of the Garuda. I'll scan it and send it to you. Interesting, because we have a view that if we've got, you know, people say, oh, I'm no good at meditating, my mind is going crazy. I thought that after so many retreats, my mind would be quiet. It's actually got louder. Or people will say, you know, my emotional life has got more, it's crazy, it's going up and down, I'm 1 minute up, 1 minute down, and meditation is supposed to have made everything stable and quiet, and I'm going storms. And it's actually not true. The storms are not the problem. And sometimes we can have huge amount of thinking, even though we've been meditating a long time and we want our mind to be quiet. It's not the problem. The problem is that we make it something, that we turn the emotion into something called me and my problem. We turn the thinking into issues. We own it as self. And what he's saying is not so far away from classic mindfulness practice. It's not really that far away. By just seeing the emptiness of these things passing through, then it doesn't matter if they're strong. And if sometimes it can help us if they're strong. To see the emptiness within a strong emotion, to see that it's like the story of the Zen student with his anger. How did the anger liberate him? Because it's power. And the power that arose took out its reality, became not my anger, but just power, and it just poof, it just blew him away. So it's the power is not a problem. The power of too much thinking, ki'ilu, or a lot of emotions, or a lot of this, that's not the problem. Okay, it can be the problem if we identify with it, if we find that it's really hard for us to see the emptiness of it. But in principle, the otzma, the power of these things, are not the problem if we work with them. They can be an advantage, actually, a help. Just like the very common image of zevel turning to compost, that the emotions as zevel. We make compost. So the more zevel, the better the garden. The better the compost. You know, if it's rich, full of shit, it's great compost. finally, realizing that all emotions in the end boil down to compassion or boil down to equanimity or balance. They join us to the world. Therefore, they can be a keresh kvitsa, a springboard to our interconnection with the world. It resolves, all emotions in the end resolve into the space of love. They resolve into the space of love. They are love with conditioning. Every emotion. Because every emotion is a response. And the response is love. It can't be anything else because I am not different from the universe, from the world. So is the world responding to itself? I can't say, you know, I'm not a, you, every one of you here, is not a kind of a sealed box. We are built from the molecules of the world, and we are responding all the time to the world. So it's really the world responding to itself. And the way we see this is through emotional life. One way to see it is liking, not liking, feeling, vibration. We feel the vibration, and it all boils down to love in the end. The love is connect, or love or compassion. The connection that we have, the connectivity, everything resolves into that. And that's where, the freedom is, the liberation. Okay. Thank you.